With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
We are here with a lovely studio audience, and so good to have you guys all watching us today. Record, and they parted ways with head coach Freddie Kitchens. Cleveland hired Vikings offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski to be their new coach, and he will be tasked with getting Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, and the Browns offense back on track. And joining us now, Browns Pro Bowl receiver Jarvis Landry.
Thank you.
Of the MSC Foundation and the Super Coral Play Campaign. So just first tell us about that.
Just an opportunity for me to, you know, kind of raise awareness about Super Coral and what it means to our environment and to our future.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for being here. I know you've got a lot of questions.
I do. Mr. Landry, welcome to Undisputed. 6 months ago, we were bullish on your football team. Shannon was driving your bandwagon. I'm a big Baker fan. We thought this is the year you guys are at least going to be a playoff team, if not go deep in the playoffs. And the bottom fell out. And you go 6-10. Baker had a bad year. You had a pretty good year. Nick Chubb actually had a very good year. So what was the main reason that you went 6-10? What, as you've had time to let it sink in, what exactly happened if you had to put one finger on one issue?
Communication, you know, it's the biggest thing. You know, you've played the game, you know, and when you don't have everybody on the same page at all times, it can definitely screw a lot of things up. And, you know, I was a part of it and you guys saw.
So can we start with Freddie Kitchens? Was it just a bad idea to elevate him? He'd never been close to being a head coach. He'd only been a coordinator for, what, about half a year?
Yeah.
So was that the start of the undoing of the Browns?
You know, I wouldn't say that. You know, I think the transition that that I believe the organization was trying to make from the first year was, you know, I think it was the right thing to do. You know, the relationship that he had formed with Baker. But, you know, running a team, it's a lot more than just being personal with one guy.
Correct.
And coaching one guy, you know, and not that he was in over his head or anything like that, but we just couldn't find a way to get on the same page and figure out what our identity was. Mm.
Did Freddie ever get on Odell's same page? Because you two guys are very close, obviously. I hope you're still close because it was a long, hard year.
Yeah.
But you had a few more targets than he did, a few more catches than your man Odell did, had a little better year than Odell, and across the board, he had career lows in every category. Did it work between you and Odell?
Yeah, it did. You know, it did. You know, and a lot of that played a big part in, you know, what he went through this year was, you know, the injury, you know, the coming into a new team and a new system. You know, a lot of the chemistry that me and Baker had kind of developed the year before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of easy for him to see my body language and understand when I was coming out of break, you know, and a little bit different for Odell.
Yeah.
Being that training camp was tougher because he was hurt and we were just trying to manage him to get him to the season.
Right.
You know, so a lot of those things kind of got missing. But, you know, we tried to do our best to make sure that he was able to play, you know, having him on the field is definitely a big element for our offense. You know, he's a big part of it, and this year we'll see that, I'm sure.
You mentioned Odell, and did he really fully buy into it? Because I think, you know, Odell looks at himself as a mega superstar, and there are not very many mega superstars that's in Cleveland. I think it caught him by surprise, not only that the Giants traded him, you leave New York and go to Cleveland, but they traded him to the Browns. Did he fully embrace that? Because it didn't seem like he was always talking about being somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always a shock, you know, when you just got to pick up and leave a place that right. You feel like you were going to be at. for your entire career. So, you know, it's definitely a tough transition. For myself, it was a tough transition. But I would not say that he was not brought in. You know, he was brought in. He was doing everything on a weekly basis to make sure that he could be able to play on Sunday.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, leading guys on and off the field. You know, I mean, you look at it off the field this year, you know, he's had a great year, you know. And again, once we get this, a guy like Odell back healthy, you know, you're gonna see, you know, him doing the things that he's always done.
This is your third head coach in 3 years. I mean, you went from Hugh, you went to Freddie, and now you're Stefanski. Mm-hmm. How do you adjust? I mean, now you're about to hear your third message in 3 years.
You know, just trusting it. You know, I think for me, you know, it was tough again, like I say, with the transition and then with the coaching changes as well. You know, Hugh Jackson is a guy that I definitely respect, and Freddie Kitchens as well. And now having Kevin here and getting a new philosophy, understanding a new offense, you know, it's still going to be tough. But, you know, I'm a competitor. Every time I take the field, I take the field to win, regardless of who's calling the plays, regardless of who's coaching, or who's throwing the ball, or who I'm next to. So my approach will always stay the same. And as long as I have that, I feel confident in myself and my ability that it doesn't matter who the coach is or anything like that.
So I mentioned Baker Mayfield. I remain a big fan. Shannon goes on and off the bandwagon. Baker had a rough ride, man. I look at the numbers. He fell to 21st in the league in QBR. His completion percentage was second to last in the league. That's no good. And his touchdown-interception ratio was dead last in the National Football League because it was 22 touchdowns to 21 interceptions. I can't defend any of that. I did think he got a little too Odell conscious, like trying to force balls to Odell, because he obviously loves you and he trusts you, but I got to get the other superstar involved, maybe to a fault. And after a while, he didn't look sure of himself, like he's second guessing every decision. And I don't know what you felt or saw in him, but it just wasn't the same guy we saw as a rookie.
Yeah. Again, communication. You know, a lot of it comes back down to game planning. You know, making sure, you know, I had opportunity to set with Michael Vick today. And, you know, I know as a quarterback, a lot goes into game planning, you know, that a quarterback feels like he's comfortable with.
Right.
You know, and I don't think that he has as much say-so in that as he had like to, you know. So a lot of the decisions making and things like that, and protection, you know, a lot of things, you know, receivers not being in the right spot, you know, I take fault to that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there were definitely things and opportunities that I had to make plays or stop play defenders from making plays, and just quite didn't, you know. So you can't put the sole blame on one person. Obviously, he's going to look at his season that he's had and make the adjustments and make the changes that he needs to make to come back this year and, you know, be the guy that you can defend on the show.
You look at, when I look at you guys, I thought you should have played through Nick Chubb because he's having a heck of a year.
Yeah.
And I thought Freddie K, because when you have a quarterback like Baker, you take him number one overall. You have receivers like yourself who's been a Pro Bowl player. Odell has been a Pro Bowl player. You kind of sometimes you find yourself getting away what you really should do, and you try to spread it around. Well, I got to keep Jarvis. I got to give him his 10 mm-hmm. targets. Odell need his 9 to 10 targets. And you miss out on the opportunity to do what Tennessee did, which is ride a horse into the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think Nick Chubb has hell of a start to his career, you know. You know, and one of the guys that I admire his hard work and his approach, you know, from even his rookie season. You know, he's been producing since then. I think for us as an offense, again, we didn't really know what our true identity was. Right. We would go into games, you know, this game we want to run the ball 50 times, or this game we want to throw the ball 50 times.
Right.
You know, instead of just doing whatever it took to win.
Right.
You know, and making the in-game adjustments. That's where I say with the communication of coming off the field and saying, Coach, we see this. Coach, they're playing cover two. They're playing Clyde to Odell. I'm getting single, you know, and being able to make that adjustment on the fly.
Right.
And I didn't think that we did that very well. Hmm.
Freddie, go ahead, Skip.
You guys were featured on Hard Knocks 2 years ago, and you just stopped the show, man. It was Baker's, obviously, rookie camp. But the highlight for me was your tirade in the receivers room against all the receivers who were not practicing because of minor injuries. And I can't quote much of it because it got pretty profane, which was good because I think you got everybody's attention. Did any of that happen behind the scenes this year? Did you take any stands? Did you mount the soapbox in the locker room or in any meeting room this year and read the riot act to your team?
Yeah, I didn't really have to. You know, I think what I said, you know, everybody saw and everybody felt. A lot of our receiver group was still intact from the year before. And, you know, you add another guy, you add Odell Beckham, who has that mentality, who's played through injuries, you know, who's trying to practice through injuries. And again, we found a way to manage him, found a way to manage myself throughout the season. I played hurt all year as well, you know, and, you know, that's something that when you have a team and are playing in this league, period, you know, it's 100% injury rate. You know, at some point
you better believe it.
You're going to get hurt, you know, and, you know, guys are going to have to play through it. And it really was just more about creating that mental for everybody to know that, you know, it's going to take everybody.
Hmm. What are we missing out on Odell? I mean, I've heard you said it, that he's misunderstood. Hmm. Odell says people don't understand him. What are we missing out on?
I mean, he's a great person. You know, if you guys ever just, you know, sit down and talk, which I'm sure you have talked with him, and, you know, maybe at times it's confusing to see, you know, some of the things he do versus the person that you see he really is. But, you know, he's a true competitor. You know, he loves his family. He loves, you know, playing this game. You know, he loves inspiring people, you know, and I think for us to this year coming, you know, when we see a healthier, more settled in Odell Beckham, again, you can expect the things that we've always seen from him.
You know, Mike Thomas is the only one that can catch all the balls. They got to spread the ball around to some other people. Jay?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what they got going over there, you can't knock it, you can't hit it. You know, Mike is doing his thing.
You know what the difference is between you and Odell? This is my two cents from a distance. Your priority is winning. You are driven to win. He is driven to star. Like, his stats in the end are slightly more important to him than winning the football game. If both happen at the same time, great.
Right.
But in the end, I believe your heart is in a little better team place than his heart is. And I think it rubs off in the locker room that way. And I thought maybe you would be able to rub off on him because you guys were close going into this new partnership. And I don't think you did. I don't think, because you can't change what he was in New York City, and it's hard to go from the Big Apple to Cleveland, Ohio. Nothing against Cleveland. I love Cleveland, but it's not New York. And he knew it wasn't New York. And I think it was hard for him to say, I'm a superstar in Cleveland, and you were the driving force of the team the year before. And then all of a sudden, Nick Chubb's the new star, and Baker had a lot of star power because he's in like every commercial on TV. So I'm not sure Odell ever got it that you had the makings. This man thought you had the makings of a playoff team. And it somehow it didn't click around Odell because I'm not sure he gets it yet. And I don't even know if you can comment. You probably won't comment on that. But that's my take.
No, I definitely think he gets it. You know, he's definitely a team guy. I think personally, you know, we all, in a sense, you know, we play this game to win, you know. And he's one of those guys that feel like if he gets his numbers, the chances of winning goes up.
Right.
Which I agree with. You know, if he gets targets, if he gets his catches, if he gets opportunities to make plays, the chances of us winning, the chances of that being a successful play goes up, you know.
Here's the flip side. That man right there was the flip side of Odell to me, because he realized early on he was the leader of Super Bowl championship teams, but he also knew if he only made one big catch a game, that's the formula.
Right.
And so, especially when you get to Baltimore, you're big play Shay, but it might be one play Shay.
Right. I give you a prime example. Look at the 49ers.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Sanders is a Pro Bowl receiver in Denver, two times over.
Yep.
Look at Deebo Samuels, what he could be.
Yep.
They throw eight passes, but they're in the Super Bowl. You see, they don't value their success or winning through catching.
Right.
Because sometimes receivers, I've been one,
yep,
and I've been around a lot of great ones, sometimes they only see their value right in catches and yards.
But I think what y'all are missing is they're winning. They're in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, and that's the missing piece of this whole thing. You know, we're losing and we're still not getting the touches or the targets. So at that point, at what point do you talk to your coach and say, hey, coach, I would love to be involved this week? Or, hey, coach, this is what's going on the field. The communication, and then that adjustment doesn't be made. You know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating as a receiver. I know, me personally.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, let me put it like this here. How many times did you go, you or Odell went to Freddie K? Coach, they got good secondary. We need to run that ball to Nick Chubb. How many times you or Odell went to Freddie K and said, let's run this thing?
Well, never.
Exactly. You see what I'm talking about?
I say that to say this, right? A lot of play calling, I believe, just playing in 6 years, and I know there's people, you know, you have more experience. There's a lot more experience, you know, around the NFL than I have. But if a team is playing cover two, then we run the football.
Run them out of it.
If they're playing man to man, then I mean, let your dogs eat.
Okay.
And that's all. That was kind of our argument.
But if you're playing man to man, you still can go run the football.
We still can run the football.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if they're loading the box with one safety deep and they're playing man to man on the outside with, like you say, two Pro Bowl receivers, yeah, then what are we waiting for? Why are we playing this game with them? This chess, not checkers.
Okay,
this chess.
But to your point.
Yeah.
You were a Dolphin. They still love you, man.
They do, and I love them.
To his point, after the NFC Championship game, Emmanuel Sanders was just crowing about the blocks he threw. Mm-hmm. He couldn't talk enough about how I got this guy and I got that guy, because they were springing Mostert. It was like big pass plays were run plays,
yeah,
right? And if it's man-to-man, you can just draw a bead on your man if you know what's coming, man. You can just knock him off his feet.
Yeah.
You can get leverage because you know where you're going and he doesn't. So it's easier to block man-to-man than cover two, to me.
Yeah, but okay, at the end of the day, too, you think Nick Chubb had his big runs because we wasn't blocking?
Oh, no, I understand. Know, I mean, you got to knock people off
the field. A lot of big runs,
yes,
came from second-level, third-level blocks.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So we were doing that. You know, it was just also opportunities, you know, that we felt like we had that we didn't take advantage of, or we didn't adjust to throughout a game.
Right.
That wouldn't allow us to, you know, I would say be successful. You know, if we played great on offense, we didn't play great on defense that mm-hmm. game. Or we gave up a touchdown on special teams. You know, it's a team game. You know, right, it's not just about the offense. It's not just about the players that you have on offense.
Okay.
You know, it's about everybody.
So, last question. I mentioned this before. Need your view of this.
Yep.
What was the internal view? I love Baker again, and I loved all of his Progressive insurance commercials, but I'm talking about relentless. And I'm sure he made a ton of money. God bless him for that.
Yep.
But I thought it was just too much too soon, because after a while, your opponents are seeing him in every This Is My House commercial. They're like all, you can't turn on a basketball game without seeing five versions of that commercial. Was that too much too soon for a young quarterback?
You know what? I don't think so. You know, I think everybody goes through their life and their walk and their journey a certain way, you know, and that's the path and the way that he chose it to be. But at the end of the day, I ultimately feel like he's always been the type of guy that's, you know, had to prove something. And now he's got another opportunity to do it this year coming up.
Well, he's got a big opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm excited to be a part of it and help him do that.
All right. Good for you.
Good job.
All right. We appreciate you being here. The open and honest conversation.
Yeah.
Before you go, though, I want to ask you about what you did at the Pro Bowl and your dodgeball championship, because this was incredible. I'm not sure if everyone saw this performance from you, but can you just take me through the mindset in getting it done?
Yeah. I mean, I played in the Pro Bowl the last, you know, 5 years, and just had an opportunity to really think about that dodgeball
game. Strategy.
Yeah, strategy. You know,
you weren't dodging, you like, I get more catching the ball.
Exactly. You know, that's what I was born and raised to do, and you know, they kept on throwing it, I kept on catching them.
It looks like a fun experience, and I loved the celebration from all of you guys. Just a light note there, and we appreciate you being here. We're going to be rooting for you and the Browns and wishing you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Enjoy the week. No mercy. And welcome back to Miami Undisputed is live all week. We are so thrilled to be here in this wonderful weather. All these fans, this audience, this setting, it doesn't get any better than this for Super Bowl 54. And there is no denying that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes may be a coaching quarterback match made in heaven. 7, according to backup QB Matt Moore. Reed and Mahomes geek out over geometry in the film room and also finish each other's sentences. Fox Sports NFL analyst Michael Vick is joining us now. Coach Reed well, but in terms of Patrick Mahomes, how much pressure is he under?
I think there's some pressure for Patrick. I think because, you know, at this juncture in Andy's career and everything that he's been through, you know, in regards to trying to win a championship from the Philadelphia days to, you know, his days in Kansas City and getting so close last year, I think the pressure comes from with Patrick trying to win this Super Bowl for Andy. So that pressure stems through, you know, that situation. And, you know, Andy Reid probably won't coach as long as Patrick Mahomes is going to play. Probably another 15, 16 years for him, you know, if he's healthy. And he probably will, and he will be. But Andy's not going to coach that long. And I think if Andy gets the Super Bowl right now, the pressure will be lifted. He can drop the mic and move on.
Speaking of Andy Reid, take us back, if you will, that summer of 2009. You were released from federal custody, August, highly controversial. And one man said, I want him.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take a chance. And that was Andy Reid said, I want Michael Vick in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
How big a deal was that to you? Was there a moment when you were afraid nobody would take a chance?
Yeah, I was afraid when I thought nobody would want me. I looked at Andy and was saying to myself, why me? You know, he had Donovan McNabb, he had Kevin Cobb, who was a second round pick. And I couldn't figure out what I could bring to the table for the Philadelphia Eagles, other than going in and being a great teammate, being a great guy in the team, in the film room, in the locker room, and bringing some leadership. But of course I, you know, approached it with an open mind, opened up to Andy. He opened up to me, and the first thing he told me was, don't screw it up, and that summed everything up for me. I knew what I was up against, and I knew what I had to do, the responsibilities that came with everything.
So describe the Andy Reid that you came to know in 2009.
He was just a warm person when I met him, and, you know, we talked. I found out he had a great sense of humor, you know, easy to make you laugh, very easy going, easy to talk to. I spent more time talking to Andy Reid than I did with any of my coaches. And, you know, at that juncture in my career, I wanted to, you know, kind of soak everything in and take advantage of every opportunity and every moment and every friendship and every relationship. And Andy was a guy that I always leaned on for advice, and it wasn't just always football.
You talk about, and I've never heard anybody have anything bad to say about Andy Reid.
No, I have never heard one person. And in fact, real quick before you go, Terrell Owens sat in that seat on Monday and said Andy Reid was his favorite coach. Listen, Terrell clashed with every coach who tried to coach him.
He
rebelled, except, you know, Andy. Okay, go ahead.
He was my brother's offensive coordinator in Green Bay. My brother was the one that told me his name was Red, and so that's why I get the name
calling him Red.
What is it about him? Because you said he's like warm. He's like almost like a giant teddy bear, like he's everybody's friend. They ask him, say, well, Andy, what did you do after you won the AFC Championship? Well, ate a cheeseburger and went to bed. That's Andy Reid.
I think because Andy understands the big picture. He knows that this is just a fraction of what we're trying to accomplish, and it's more out there. But I think his team looks at that and says, we got to be like him. We got to be humble. We got to be respectful of our situation and where we are. And stay on the grind. Don't lose focus. You know, it's a bigger picture.
Right.
And I think Andy sets the tone for the rest of his locker room.
To get back to the game, and we talked about earlier, Skip, and I opened up about the pressure. I don't think there's pressure, and I don't think he'll feel like, oh my goodness, I don't know what I'm gonna do for my Patrick Mahomes. I think he understands that in order for them to win this game, there's no other way Kansas City can win other than Patrick Mahomes playing unbelievable.
Yeah.
The 49ers can win. They can run the football. They can suffocate you on the defensive side. They can take the ball away. That's not how Kansas City is built. They're built to play with the lead, put pressure on the opposing team's offense, coax them into mistakes. Because if you look at the two playoff games, they've given up 41 points in the first half, 14 points in the second half. What's different? Kansas City has the lead in the second half. And so now they're forcing you to play catch-up.
For the Kansas City Chiefs and the deficit that they created the last two playoff games, it just can't happen.
It better not happen.
And I think
Patrick Mahomes and his ability to run the football, which was a big caveat in the reasoning why they won those last two games. He took off more in the last two postseason games than he did probably all season long.
Correct.
And it was the deciding factor in the games. It created first downs. It created a touchdown. And, you know, they was able to mount the comebacks, keep drives going, and keep the opposition off the field. So, you know, that's what has to happen. They got to stand to their element and not get outside of what the things that they do well.
Now, let's be clear about this. Patrick Mahomes, no Michael Vick when it comes to running the football, though.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. You know, keep that under wraps. Like, you know, everybody's not like myself or Lamar Jackson with the dynamic speed. Sometimes I think it could be a gift and a curse, and I'd rather see Patrick scramble and throw the long ball than the scrambling run.
Back to Andy Reid. I think a lot of people miss the point on this, but Andy has a long history of taking chances on troubled football players.
Right.
And right now, you look on his roster, and he's got Tyreek, LeSean, Frank Clark, Travis Kelce had issues in college. And Andy, if you know him well, he's a very religious man. I think there's some sort of Father Flanagan in him that he wants to give second chances because he feels like he can reach these players and win with these players.
Yeah.
Did you get that vibe from him?
I got that vibe. Andy's a difference maker in life in general. Mm-hmm. And he's not afraid to take chances. And when most people are, I think that's when he's at his most, you know, boldest moments in his life. You know, he has the bravado to take it on. He's not afraid. And that's one thing that he explained to me when he first brought me in. And that's why he said, don't screw it up. You know, I'm sticking my neck out there. And I'm pretty sure he tells every guy that who he's giving a second chance, don't screw it up.
Skip, I think a lot of it has to do with it because he had a son that had issues.
Good point.
And he looks at Mike and he looks at these other guys as if they're his kids.
He lost that son.
And he says, you know what? I would want someone to give my son an opportunity, a second chance. Mm-hmm. So this is what, so you know what? I'm going to do this for you, Mike, but don't mess this up. And I think that's how Andy approaches it. And the little bit I've been around him, like I said, only been around him a handful of times, I think once at the Pro Bowl, and I met his family, but they were very, very young then, Skip. It's hard not to like him because he's so likable. You understand that, you know, he's the coach, he's in charge of everything, but he makes you feel like he's just a guy. Like, you can just talk to him like, he's a position coach, not a head coach.
I'm gonna tell you when I knew Andy Reid was a man of second chances. Long story short, didn't play a lot in preseason in 2012. Played the Cleveland Browns first week of the season, and I'm just like, okay, this is gonna be a performance, a stat game.
Right.
You know, the stat game, you go out and you put up numbers, you know what it's like.
Yeah.
I go out and throw four interceptions. Never did that in my career. And he was a man of second chance because I still had my job the next week. So I said, I'll let you say that.
Now I'm going to give you the downside to everything we just talked about. There are those around this league for years who have looked at Andy as almost too good to his players, that there's not enough discipline, that it's kind of a loosely run ship, that his teams haven't been in the best shape as the season wore on, that they could just get outworked by the teams who are just in better conditioned teams. As you look back, is there any truth to that? Because Andy in the biggest games has not been the greatest.
From my experience with Andy, he looked for the older guys and to be leaders in the locker room. Mm. So for me, it was, you know, taking on the responsibility of making sure that Deshaun and Macklin and LeSean was, you know, always on time or in meetings or training or doing the right things. He put the onus on the older guys, and, you know, that's just a coach, you know, treating his guys as professionals. And I respected that, and I took responsibility for that, and I did it to the best of my ability. You know, but every guy doesn't, you know, gravitate to that, and they don't take that all in. So, sometimes it could get a little loose, but the last person's bad side you want to be on is Andy Reid. And trust me, he does have a bad side.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have an instance of that? Do you remember him losing his temper in the locker?
Well, he lost his temper with me one time. Well, he lost his temper with Deshaun one day.
Yeah.
And it was really ugly. It was after a Sunday night game, and we had a game on Thursday.
Right.
And, you know, Deshaun never complained about catches or not getting his just due because he was the ultimate team player. But it was some riff. And, you know, Andy looked at me. He was like, you better get him. you better get them. So it was my responsibility, but it got out of hand, but it ended, you know, the way it was supposed to, with love.
Hearing you and T.O. speak so glowingly about him, I mean, it's going to stick with me.
Got so much respect for him.
A difference maker in life. That's what I'm going to remember.
He is the ultimate sympathetic figure head coach.
Wow.
And a good
nobody will be unhappy if he loses this game, except maybe 49 fans.
And you've heard Patrick Mahomes say he wants to win it for him. It's been 50 years since the Chiefs have been to the Super Bowl. We're so glad you came on today, Mike. So good to have you. Enjoy the week. I know it's going to be busy for you, but it is always a good time when you join Undisputed. Thank you again.
Mercy.
Here he is, the one and only Snoop Dogg joining us.
We appreciate you being here. And before I ask my first question, I want people here and out there in our TV audience to know this man is a hardcore, long time, till death do him part, Laker fan. This is no Johnny come lately bandwagon jumper. This man goes on the road with his Los Angeles Lakers. When this man speaks Lakers, it comes straight from the bottom of his heart. Which brings us to what happened Sunday. You were on the road in Detroit when you heard the news. How did it hit you?
Still trying to process it. Dear friend of mine, loved his whole transformation, how he became great. You know, when he first got to LA, he wasn't great. He was a kid and he was learning and he was making mistakes and I was a kid at the same time. So it was like, it was beautiful watching his story and watching mine and watching him become a legend and become a father and become a mentor. Become a real leader. So it crushed my heart because I knew that he wasn't done. I just spoke with him at Puffy's 50th birthday party and he was telling me about some of the things that he was working on and where his mind was as far as like being comfortable with retirement and just finding happiness with his daughters and finding that peace with being other than the basketball player. And that just crushed me because to see that, you know, it just hurt. I'm still hurt right now as we speak, Skip.
So you were okay that they postponed last night?
I was very okay with it because I felt like the player's spirit wasn't in the mood to compete. A lot of those guys really love Kobe, and he was instrumental in a lot of those guys, from the Clippers to the Lakers. You see how Doc reacted to it?
Oh.
You know, and those aren't fake reactions. That's real. That man meant a lot to us, whether we competed against him, whether we played for him, played with him. His spirit, just the dog in him, just being the mama, that created the spirit of to attack because it got too friendly at a certain point. The game was too friendly and he made it about competition. It's about winning. And that's what it's always been about with him.
And you've talked in the last couple of days to a number of the players. I know Lakers and Clippers.
Yes, I spoke with a lot of players because naturally they hit me because I'm like their uncle. I'm like Uncle Snoop.
Yeah.
So they calling me to make sure I'm all right, but then at the same time, they need advice, they need wisdom, they need guidance on how do we deal with this? And I really don't know what to say because I'm trying to deal with it, but at the same time, I gotta be strong and I gotta give them the information that I feel like Kobe would have gave them. He would say, keep pushing, keep going, because he was a dog. He was never a quitter, so he would want y'all to keep rolling.
Snoop, when we talked about this on Monday, I said it felt like a family member had passed.
Mm.
Because you watch a 17-year-old kid become a champion, become a husband, become a father, and then he transitioned after 20 years in the NBA, and he goes to a new phase of his life. And it seems that he was going to be as successful in the new phase as he was in the old. And, you know, sometimes we just think a guy like Kobe, we expect him to live forever. We expect him to be 85, 90. He gets old, goes to sleep one night, doesn't wake up. God, they're not supposed to die like this, Snoop. And I'm like you when someone sent me, I was like, that ain't true. So I turned the TV on. Well, the TV, there's nobody showing. There's no breaking news because I'm saying if something like this happens to Kobe Bryant, this is going to be breaking news everywhere, not
every
just sports.
Every game supposed to stop everything.
Yes, and then all of a sudden, you see it.
Right.
Scrolling across the bottom of the screen.
Mm.
I'm like, man, this is true? How? I was telling, like, I had just texted him, and look, I met him at the Icon Awards. I didn't meet him for the first time, but he was talking to him. I was like, Kobe, bro, you seem so at peace. How, when you competed like you did? Because a lot of athletes, you know, they have these struggle
right.
leaving the game because it's all they've done, it's all they know.
Right.
He's like, man, look, I gave it everything I had. The way I trained, the way I practiced, I got nothing. Now my focus is the creative side. Mm. I want to write stories. I want to tell stories. That's why I want to be a family. I just want to be my girl
and
my family.
And be a father.
Yes!
That was the most exciting part of me seeing him show up to games and roll with his daughter and be the father.
Right.
When you become a father, that's the most beautiful gift you can get in this world, to be able to have that relationship with your kids.
Right.
It was when he retired, I had him come to my spot in Englewood because I wanted to give him a gift. A gift to me with my six-fold Chevrolet. I gave it to him. I wanted him to have it. But when he came to see me and my son was in the studio and he was talking to my son, and the information that he was giving my son was so, it was like a teacher. And it was the same stuff that I had told my son, but he didn't hear me the way he heard him.
It's funny how that works.
It was so much confirmation.
Yes.
That I needed from Kobe to come in and mentor my son at that time, because he had made the decision not to play football
right.
and to try other things in right. life. And Kobe gave him the confirmation that whatever you do, just be great at what you do.
Right. And the thing was, is that he had that personality like Magic. Magic might meet you for the first time, but Magic Johnson makes you feel like he's known you 25 years. That's how Kobe was. I met Kobe in Denver, and I walk up to him, and I'm like, hey, man, let me get them shoes. He's like, you want? He gave me the shoes, signed them, and just started carrying on the conversation, yada, yada. It's like, bro, you just met me. It's just something about him. And like you said, I know Laker Nation is hurt, but even people that rooted against Kobe or rooted against his team broke down. Because you can't believe that this actually happened.
You know what
happened.
It was? He was the type of athlete that even the enemies loved him.
Yes.
Like, and that's hard to say, because when you compete and you don't really like the person that you're up against, but it was something about his drive that made the enemy respect his drive, because he never gave up and he always went at him.
Right.
And I'm just so hurt, but I'm so happy that his legacy will live on through people like us, and we putting shows together to keep his name and keep his spirit going in the righteous way. And I think the NBA should change that logo to him. I'm gonna speak on it because I felt like Michael Jordan logo was already out there on the shoes. His shoes is everywhere.
Yeah,
you can't deny
the
that.
Man.
Yeah, so, and I think Jordan will concede and say, you know what, let my little brother get that, because the players right now are more his peers and his, they look up to him more. Jordan is the generation before that. A lot of them didn't see Jordan like they seen Kobe. So I feel like that would be the proper gesture for the NBA to do, to go ahead and make it happen. Jerry West already given approval, so make it go.
Well, if you saw Jerry last night on TNT, he was just pouring his guts out on national TV because he did consider himself.
Jerry found
a
him in high school.
He found him.
So if you look, first of all, we have Vlade Divac. Let me tell you this.
He was an all-star, and he traded him.
Vlade and Magic was 1-2 punch. We was the whole thing with Vlade, and he traded Vlade for this kid out of high school. We was like, man, what is he doing?
Yeah.
What is he doing? Mm-hmm. But then when he came, remember, he was behind Eddie Jones, Van Exel, and all them, but he was different than them.
Yeah.
Whenever he would hit the court, it was like, man, he need to be in more.
And then Jerry said last night, I traded Eddie Jones, an all-star wave, because I knew that kid was ready to play.
Right.
You hear what I just said? I'm a diehard. Eddie Jones and Van Exel, them, they was great. But he was just different, and he wasn't even great then. He was just, you could see his light was flickering. He didn't know how to turn it on, but it was flickering. And once he learns how to turn that light on, it wasn't going to never come off.
Well, you remember that first season ended with that Utah loss and the closeout game?
He shot a lot, so what?
Yeah.
That's how you develop your shot. You got to shoot it in order to get it right.
And then make it come full circle. The final game was against Utah, and he dropped 60.
And I'm in the crowd dancing with him. You understand me?
The mama mentality, and everybody understands what a black mama is, very venomous snake.
Yes.
But that snake will attack without provocation.
Nothing.
You ain't got to step on him. You ain't got to bother this young.
Nothing.
He will chase you. It will chase you to bite. Kobe didn't need you to be an enemy to drop 50 on you. You would be his best friend, as Michael Jordan. He put 55 on and say, take that with you to retirement.
But also, but not only that, like if a celebrity wanted to play against him. For example, Bow Wow wanted to play against him. My little homeboy, Bow Wow, like 5'8". So you think he gonna be nice to Bow Wow? He backing Bow Wow down, taking it to him hard, talking mess. Like he don't like to lose. And that's the mentality of the Mamba that
I feel like it's going to carry on. It's going to make the league more stronger because the league is getting a little too friendly.
Yeah.
It's a lot of friendships, which is no problem with that. But when we competing, we're supposed to compete.
Right.
And that's what I like about the Clippers is that when they play the Lakers, they compete and they bring it to us. And I think the league should get more onto that page.
And you see what's happening? You see guys that we don't expect. We see guys, Eric Gordon drop 50.
Yes.
We see Buddy Hield come off the bench, drop 42. Chris Middleton last night hit 51. You had Bradley Beal drop. You're getting guys. Something's going on here, Snoop.
Right.
Something that we've never, ever seen before because we've really never had an athlete kind of like Kobe. You know, we talked about it, Skip, Roberto Clemente, who was delivering aid to Nicaragua, or Dale Earnhardt,
who died in a plane crash.
Yeah. But we haven't seen anything like this. And like you said, Jordan was the idol of like guys like Kobe and LeBron.
Right.
The guys that are playing now, Kobe is their idol like Jordan was to them.
Yes.
So
it's facts. Don't say, facts. You better do a heat check right now. Ask every player in the NBA, who did you want to be like growing up?
Yeah. Kobe. Because some of these guys are one and done. Well, Kobe was zero and done. He's straight from high school. And LeBron said that gave him the courage. Well, he did. I believe I can do that.
Right.
So we lost some iconic entertainers way too soon. I brought up Monday, Michael Jackson was gone at 50 and Prince was gone at 57. And if I can hark back to Elvis, he was gone at 42.
Uh-huh.
But each of those icons, there was some self-destruction involved in their demise. This was just straight tragedy, that just shocking, can't happen tragedy. This is a man who almost flew helicopters for a living, it felt like. Like he helicoptered everywhere he went.
He flew to come see me in a helicopter.
There you go.
By himself.
Whew.
And he said the reason was, Skip, they're asking why. He said what had happened was the traffic had started to get so bad that he was missing his daughter's recitals. He was missing things.
Mm.
He said, well, I still need to be true to my craft. So I still got to put that time in. I got to practice. I got to get the weight time in. But I also need to get back. So he's like, the only thing, logical thing for me to do is to get above the fray. 15 minutes there, 15 minutes back. Boom, I don't miss a thing.
Yeah, because that's a three-hour drive in traffic. That's a three-hour drive in traffic from where the stadium was to where he had to go. So that 15-minute commute was a beautiful situation for him.
Right, and then remember, they practicing in El Segundo.
Right.
So he swooping down there.
Because he was way down in
Newport.
Newport Beach, Orange County.
Yeah. And what I want to say about the situation, that you can never question God.
No.
And he don't make no mistakes. And it's not an accident. It's not something that wasn't supposed to be, it is. And as tragic as it is, we have to look at it and say, what do we learn from this? What do we get from this? And you can see people's spirits are changing based off of this. This one man is shifting the whole world based off of how he lived when he was in this world. So we just got to take that and pray for the family, pray for his wife, kids, and try to give them the strength to keep moving forward and just do what we're supposed to do as leaders in the world right now.
Because you know what it is, Skip? This happened to Kobe Bryant. You see, a lot of times we see death and it's like, oh, that's, we don't really know. We're not connected to that. That happened to somebody that we feel we know on a personal level. If that can happen to him, so all the pettiness, man, the bickering back and forth, is it really that bad? Do I got a beef or a gripe with you that bad that I'm willing to, like, I don't know if I leave the home that I'm going to come back and tell you I'm sorry, that I love you, I miss you,
right.
I apologize to you?
Immediately, Shannon, let me tell you what I did. I called everybody that I love and I told them I loved them. And I started getting texts from my auntie, my mother, and I just put an Instagram out that hugs and I love you are in season. Hugs and I love you are in season. It's in season, so it's okay to hug somebody and tell them I love you, because it's been so much hate and so much negativity that we've been led to follow. Let's put some new energy out there. Let's take this tragic event and make something positive out of it and put love in there.
Well said, thank you. What is your early gut feeling on how this will inspire this year's Lakers going forward?
It's championship. And I say that for many reasons. I felt like that before this happened, but I just feel like the confirmation from LeBron passing Kobe and his daughter coming to see him at that game where he hugged him and he whispered something in his ear. Like, this is a connection that we in LA was waiting on Kobe to give us the approval to say that LeBron is okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
That's
yeah.
facts. Like, mm-hmm. I've always loved LeBron and didn't have to wait for the approval, but the city of LA was waiting on Kobe to say, crown him, let him go, let the king do what he do. And Kobe did that, and now it's on him to do what he do. LeBron know what the task is at hand. LeBron is a soldier. He's built for this. He's strong. He's got broad shoulders. He can take this, and I think he's going to rally the troops, and we're going to figure this thing out, and we're going to go to the mountaintop.
Whew. We all have a Kobe story. Everyone sitting in this room, really powerful to hear yours, Snoop. Thank you for sharing, and let's end on that while we go to break. Hugs and love are in season, because that's what I'm going to be thinking about.
No mercy.
And we are just lucky to have Snoop here on Undisputed. It is always a good day when you join us on set. It has been an emotional couple days, and I do want to talk about some football because we have a lot of questions for you.
So here we have a Super Bowl, and we have an offensive coordinator for the Chiefs who is a minority, and we have a defensive coordinator for the 49ers who is a minority, but we just went through a big hiring cycle in which a bunch of highly qualified head coaching candidates who happen to be African-American got no jobs. Your thoughts on that?
The Rooney Rule was put in place for this situation right here. It just was totally ignored this year. Eric Bieniemy, same class as me, 1989. We graduated the same year. I've seen him in high school play as a football player. I've seen him go to Colorado and ball, and I'm watching him as a great football mind work alongside with Andy Reid, and I feel like that was utter disrespect, because for him to uplift Patrick Mahomes in 2 years, because it's Andy and him. It ain't just one person doing it. It's a group thing. And, you know, if you know anything about football, he needs him like he needs him. So for him to be not given the shot to even get an interview, that's total disrespect. I feel like some of these owners need to be checked, because that's where it starts. It starts from the owners from up top. And if their mentality isn't right, it's never going to be right with the Rooney Rule. And we got to fix all of that by getting them in order and making sure that this happens, that these people get these righteous interviews when they earn those interviews.
Or get a fair, because look, we saw Jerry Jones interview Marvin Lewis. We knew Marvin Lewis wasn't getting that job.
Right.
We got to start with this tokenism, though.
Right.
Just bringing the guy in, okay, we checked it off, okay, we brought him in, when you have no realistic hope of giving this guy a true crack at getting the job. Because if you look at the divisional, 4 of the 8 quarterbacks were African-American.
Mm.
We got an African-American in the Super Bowl. Gonna have an African-American MVP with Lamar Jackson.
Mm.
So in other words, you're good enough to play. You're good enough to be an offensive coordinator or assistant, but no, we ain't gonna let you coach him now. And we got, remember, we got 5 officials in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
We gave you five minorities in the Super Bowl, but I thought officials are supposed to be, not, you don't even supposed to know they're there.
Right.
But you brought that to our attention, though. You want us to know that they're there.
That you're paying attention to that side of it more than you paying attention to the rule that was put in place.
Right.
This rule was put in place so that way minorities could get that first shot and get that equal opportunity, so that way you can look at their resumes and say, you know what, you do deserve a shot. Or, you know, I'm not going to hire you because I feel like X, Y, and Z, but I gave you the proper interview. You're not even giving us interviews now. That ain't even cool, man. And these guys from college, they garbage. Some of them ain't even won in college. And you're going to bring them up here to the NFL level and think that they're going to win? Like, I don't know who none of these guys is that was in college other than Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney.
Rich.
Like, if you ain't won it all, you ain't nothing. You ain't finna come up here and do nothing.
We got too many, like, Joe Judges getting jobs where they come out of nowhere, out of the blue, and we haven't even heard of them. The head coach at Baylor gets a job and had done little to, I don't know.
Is it the copycat coaching league now?
Yeah.
Because what we're doing now, when Sean McVay did his thing, the next move was, let's find us a young coach that's like him, and then that didn't work, and they were sorry this year. Then it's like, well, what are you looking for? Why don't you just give the best coach the opportunity to coach, regardless of what his background is or what his nationality is? If he's a qualified coach, give him the opportunity to coach. Like, for example, Mike Tomlin is a great coach. But if he wasn't given that opportunity, you would just look at him as a defensive coordinator or whatever his position was. But once he got that coaching spot and started to articulate and started to run his team and show you that he can win and do different things, then you have to look at that coach and say, well, wow, maybe we give another guy like that an opportunity, what could happen?
Like you did with the black quarterback.
Oh, wow.
You see, now they're showing, man, if we get that guy an opportunity, they're proving the validation. Mm-hmm. Look at Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes. Look at all these guys that are playing, like, wow. Mm-hmm. All they needed was an opportunity, a fair opportunity. Now, they're doing it. I think they should give some of these for Eric Bieniemy not to get a head coaching job. And he's actually calling the plays because, Skip, for the
I'm looking at his mouth move.
For the longest time, what did they say? Yeah, he has the title of offensive coordinator, but Andy's calling the plays. Now he's calling the plays. Well, you know, we kind of like Joe Judge. Joe Judge was, not to say anything bad about a special, because John Harbaugh started off that way.
He did.
But come on now.
Okay, speaking of your Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
There's a still young man who used to be a Steeler who's from right here in Miami named Antonio Brown. Mm. And he's had a rough ride of late. And yesterday he was freed from sort of home, or what do you call it, house arrest,
yes.
I guess. And yet still got a rough road ahead of him. Your thoughts on where he's heading?
I told you last time I was on the show and y'all asked me. I said he needed to get some help.
You did.
I'm not going to bash him or talk bad about him, but when you're looking at somebody like that, that's great, and then you watch these types of things happen, help is what's necessary. He's crying out for help, but he don't know how to get it, and his team is not strong enough to get it for him.
Yeah.
That's what he needs. He needs some mental help. He needs somebody to sit down with him and talk to him and get his life in order and put everything back in perspective. Because like you said earlier, when you're great and you have to make a transformation from not being great to figuring out what your second life is, that's when destruction could come in. He's not a rapper, a video guy, he's a football player. But he's trying so many different things right now, and people are encouraging him for the wrong reasons instead of saying, let's encourage this man to get some mental help, to see where he's at, to make sure he's okay, and then we'll see what the next move is.
It really is, Snoop. And the thing is that I'm a firm believer, if you surround yourself with people that tell you what you need to know and not what you want to hear. You see the situation where he and the mother of his kids, and he's yelling those things, and you got his boys in the background, they co-signing it. I'm like, for real, bro? You do realize that's the mother of his kids. You do realize his kids are standing right there and they're listening. In one breath, he's saying, I love you. And the next breath, he's saying all these ugly things.
I said help. He needs help. That sounds like help.
Yes.
That don't sound like somebody that's in their right mind. When you first had a dose of Antonio Brown, he was like, yeah, he's great. He's a diva, but he's okay. But then as time went on, he was like, hold on, something's wrong. Something's wrong, and it's getting out of control. And if it's like, if we don't stop it, nobody's going to stop
it.
Because he feels it's acceptable now.
You know what happened was, is that, and it happens in a lot, it's not the professional athlete is not the only, that it's a performance-based business.
Right.
The best programmers at Google gets the longest leash. And see, what happened with AB is that he started getting better and better, and the leash started getting longer and longer.
Right.
So instead of being 1 minute late for a meeting, he started showing up 5-10 minutes late. And then all of a sudden, he's like, forget the meeting.
It's okay, that's AB.
All of a sudden, Skip, he was late for practice for a little bit, then after a while, he said, forget practice. And he's like, well, you gonna play? You see, when you let that kind of behavior, because AB is he's the type of guy, Skip, he's not a guy that can rein himself in.
Right.
You have to rein him in. Antonio Brown is a car. He's taking all the wheels off the car and wondering why he can't get anywhere. Because you sabotage your own ability to ride.
Yes, sir.
So now he's looking at everybody else. It's everybody else's fault.
Yep. Back to the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger says he will be back next year. I saw good to great things from your young coming-of-age defense. What are your hopes for next year with your Steelers?
My hopes is that Ben is physically together, because when he is physically together, we tend to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the team is more structured now that we got a lot of that madness out of the locker room. The defense stepped up and showed that they really want to play.
Yep.
We got to get some better receivers. I'm not even going to sit up here in front. Y'all missed the ball too much, and it is what it is. It is what it is, because they was putting it there, and y'all wasn't making them catches. And I just feel like if Ben comes back, we got a good shot, because I don't know if Brady going to be in New England. And that's the only thing that we can't beat is the Patriots.
Mm. And speaking of Tom Brady, what do you want to see for him? There's a lot of talk about Los Angeles Chargers, Raiders talk, right?
Actually, what I want to see is the Patriots treat him like the king that he is. Mm. Like, why would you let him go away when he did all this for your organization? Like, and why would y'all play with him like that, knowing that he meant so much to your organization? But this is a business, so I get it. And I get it. And if they do him like that, because they did Montana like that, I've seen them do some of the greats
Emmitt
like that.
Smith like that.
Seen them do some greats like that where they sent them.
Yeah.
Like, be gone.
But here's the thing, Snoop. you can understand this. Okay, you were the record company. And they've been giving you peanuts all this time. Mm. And you had number one album after number one album and Grammy and number one album. And all of a sudden you say, you know what? I want to redo this deal, but I want y'all to give me what old Drizzy Drake be getting. Mm. They're like, whoa, wait a minute now. All the other years we've been giving you chicken feed, you ain't have a problem with it.
Right.
But you on the way out. You see, he's taking less money all this time.
I watched him take less money to build the team. I used to be like, why is Tom Brady not the highest paid quarterback? Every year they used to show some weak quarterback
yeah.
getting this big old money and couldn't do nothing. And Tom would be like number six or number seven, but he would make sure that the money was evenly distributed
right.
on the team so that way the team could be good. So that's why I felt like they should give him the same love back the way that the Lakers did with Kobe. When Kobe got to the end of his career, we knew he wasn't what he was,
right.
but they gave him the money to say, you understand me? We're going to break the bank behind you because we don't want you to go nowhere. We love what you gave to us. And that's what they should do to him.
They don't think like this. NFL is not like this. They're not like
especially the NFL.
NFL's not like this.
What would how would Los Angeles take to Tom Brady, Chargers quarterback?
You saying the Rams or the Chargers?
The Chargers.
The Rams,
you want to go
too.
Rams?
I'm just saying. Okay. Like,
you can go Rams.
I'm just saying. Three okay. points in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
But you just gave Jared Goff all that money. You gave him $112 million.
But what has he done? The coach is in his ear for 26 seconds. Like,
that's true.
Come on, man. Like, I can do better than that if the coach tells me, right. All right, Snoop, look to the left. Okay, just do it. Okay, now throw the ball to the right. Are you serious?
But that's the problem that Brady's up against. He's taking money. He's taking less money basically for 20 years.
The Chargers ain't a bad look for him.
No.
Hey,
because their defense, let me say this, their defense is real.
Right.
When 33 get back there and 5-4 and all them get to going, they
Bosa,
real.
Yeah.
And then on the offensive side, them receivers is dogs.
Yeah.
They got some dogs at receivers right. and the running back. If they treat Melvin Gordon right, that may be a good fit for Tom, and he could be right down the street from me.
There you have it.
Two-step Tommy, come on home, baby.
I like that. I think that works. There's a competitiveness in Tom. He wants to do it without Belichick. That's what I think.
That's
he wants
think?
To prove yeah. that he wants to do it.
You want
to
break up?
He wants to prove.
Oh, Coach Belichick definitely want
to
break up.
Are you so
oh, absolutely. I do.
But see, we can't read that as regular fans at home. We think it's beautiful.
Yeah. No. There's some
because
under
when
the
you have this kind of
drama.
Success, I need someone to say, I'm most responsible.
Are you see, serious?
When it was Coach Walsh and Joe Montana, we didn't really know who it was. But then Coach Walsh retired, and Joe went and got one without him. So who was the driving force?
See, I didn't think about it like that. I didn't think about the business side. I'm just thinking about the game.
No, I need the credit. What broke up Shaq and Craig? Kobe.
The credit.
Yeah, so I need to get that. See, Michael didn't have that problem. You knew
Scotty,
it was Michael.
Yeah, Scotty knew his role.
Yes. Coach Belichick said, y'all don't want to give me no credit, but I'm going to take old. I was going to take Jimmy G, win me a
Super
Bowl.
Oh, that was his boy.
They were going to take me Jimmy G.
Oh, I forgot
there
about that.
Go.
Jimmy G.
Ooh, and he playing in the ball.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again at the same time tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern. We'll see you then.
Facts, sports, one of one.